Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll discover the contributions being made by our Vietnam veterans and hear about the latest deployment of the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
This week, our nation celebrates the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You remember his speech from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial during the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. In that 1963 speech, Dr. King famously said, "I have a dream." Even more powerful than that iconic moment, Dr. King was a distinguished leader. He had the courage to act on his convictions. He challenged the nation to live out the true meaning of its creed, that all people are created equal and they have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Inspired by Dr. King, the Minnesota National Guard is committed to building and sustaining an organizational climate in which people of all backgrounds, cultures, races, religions, and ethnicities are fully included, valued, and respected. The challenges of Minnesota will be met by the Minnesota National Guard's diverse citizen soldiers and airmen. Thank you for listening. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Help good business get better by hiring today's veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The Vietnam Veterans of America has over 65,000 members in 48 states. Minnesota has just over 1,211 chapters. And joining us now is the President, the Minnesota State Council, Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota, Mark Madsen. Mark, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Mark, you're a veteran. Can you tell us when you served and a little bit about your military career?
Yes, I enlisted in spring of 1972, and I went to the U.S. Air Force, Lackland Air Force Base, and I went direct duty assignment to the 441st Bomb Squadron, Sacramento, California, and that's where I spent all my military time at.
Lackland Air Force Base. I remember that place.
You do.
You went there a little bit after I did.
I think we had air conditioning when I went.
Yeah, I'm quite sure we didn't when I was there. But it's good to have an Air Force veteran on the show. A lot of times we're surrounded by these Army guys. So, Mark, you are the president of the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota of America. Can you tell us a little bit about the VVA?
Well, Vietnam Veterans of America is an organization that is... our goals are to promote and support the full range of issues that are important to Vietnam veterans, to create a new identity for the generation of veterans, and to change the public perception of Vietnam veterans.
And as we went through the membership list, there's a lot of Vietnam veterans out there. There's a lot of my buddies that served in Vietnam, but for some reason, of all the veterans we talked to on the show, the World War II guys, the Korean guys, the Vietnam guys, Vietnam guys don't like to tell their story too much, and it looks like they're not signing up as in the numbers that some of the old guys did.
You know, from my experience of guys that were, especially the guys that served in country, when they got back and they got their discharge papers, the last thing they wanted to do was have anything more to do with the military or the VA. And, you know, it's very understandable because it was not a very favorable place to come from. And, you know, the public at that time was, you know, not really, you know, it's not like it is today. You know, we support our troops and all that's changed. And you know, it's all changing for the better for us and the new troops.
You know, those days back in the 70s were dangerous for us Vietnam veterans. I walked into the Hopkins VFW back in the early 70s, and the World War II guys had me signed up and an officer before they even let me leave that day. So there's probably a reason a lot of the Vietnam guys didn't walk into the veteran service organizations.
Yeah, it is. You know, And I don't know. I was the same way. I really didn't have much to do with with those organizations, and not until I got involved with Vietnam Veterans of America did I learn to, where the work that I do and I help other veterans with is, it's been, it's just been an honor. It's an honor to work with people that have gone through and seen so much, and the help that they do with us, to look after the other veterans, the young veterans that are coming back.
We're speaking with Mark Madsen, the president of the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America, on Minnesota Military Radio. Mark, what is, let's go back to the Vietnam Veterans of America. What is the founding principle of the VVA?
The founding principle is that never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. And it's a strong point, but, it comes back to, the welcoming homes that wasn't there, and through the 60s and the 70s when the people came home and they were wearing their uniform and they were frowned upon, people had a media idea what a person that served during the Vietnam Veteran War was, and it was a misconception. We all turned out to be a lot of us turned out to be very productive people in society: bankers, lawyers, pilots. Just a handy bricklayer. We fit into society, but we fit in quietly. When you look around, you can pick out the guy that probably served during the Vietnam War.
It was a different time in our country back then. There were draft dodgers, and the draft was going full blast, and body counts on the news every night, and there were anti-war riots and anti-race riots. The country was just in a bad mood in those days and kind of took it out on us. But I think, as your founding principle, never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. I've taught my children, and I'm teaching my grandchildren, to really take care of those who serve and honor them today. And I think we've made a difference, don't you?
I do. I it's incredible. The work that the Vietnam veterans do is to make sure that the benefits that are due to not only the Vietnam veteran, but the World War II veteran, the Korean veteran, and the guys that are been serving in Iraq, Afghanistan, the Gulf Wars. Any veteran in the United States has, we back them in anything that is due to them. And it doesn't mean that the country owes you anything. It means that, if there's something, you can't be afraid to be aware of what's out there for you.
And just to generally support the troops and their families for the sacrifices they make for our country.
Exactly.
Vietnam Veterans of America, can you tell us what we've got your guiding principle? What are your goals?
Our goals is, we're constantly working on things, and one of our biggest projects right now is it's called the Faces of Agent Orange, and actually it's children and grandchildren of a Vietnam veteran that were exposed to the Agent Orange dioxins, and we found through groups of Vietnam veterans getting together that had been exposed, sitting in a room and finding the similarities that they've had in their family and their children, and realizing that the similarity is the exposure to the Agent Orange. And, what we want is some serious investigation into these things and get the facts out and find out that if there's some kind of preventive things or some kind of care or some kind of awareness that we can get for these kids, because that dioxin, through my understanding, is going to last 7 generations in 200 years, and it's something we owe it to our children.
And, Mark, for those listeners that may not know, Agent Orange is a herbicide that was widely used in Vietnam to clear killing fields and to do the things we needed to do, and none of us realized that it was going to be a big problem when we were using it, but it really has grown into something, hasn't it?
No, you can't put the blame on things when the officers in the field ask for something that worked that would help save our lives, and little did they know that the thing was it was dangerous, and we learned by lessons, and now we have labels on those kinds of things, and at that time it was there to do a purpose, and it did do it.
And over the years, the VA has done some studies on the side effects and the things that Agent Orange has covered. And today it's a lot different. They recognize that there are some problems from it as opposed to 40 years ago, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's a gradual process that, you know, nobody wants to jump in and say yes to all these things that are happening as a result of. But as you know, as we get our testimonials together and you get the, you know, the similarities down there, and it's, you know, it's just not that apple fell out of the tree and at a different point. It's that these apples were probably contaminated. So
it's not just a coincidence because it happened too often. Too many people have had the same ramifications, the same physical problems, the same issues from exposure to Agent Orange, and we've proved that over the years, and it's one of the big things the Vietnam Veterans of America have been working on, isn't it?
Exactly, and you know, and it's not just the Vietnam veteran. It's, you know, they had the burning pits over in Iraq, and, you know, people are coming back with the same kind of problems that were problems that those that were in Vietnam were exposed to, or not. It's not only Vietnam, because dioxin was contaminated on many ships and on many airplanes that returned to the United States. So
it seems that every theater of war has its own issues, doesn't it?
It does, exactly.
And we're working on all of those things.
I hope so.
Mark, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Vietnam Veterans of America in Minnesota. We're speaking with Mark Madsen, President of the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking with Mark Madsen, President of the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America, on Minnesota Military Radio. Mark, I forgot to ask you, we were talking about Vietnam Veterans of America and how many members there were nationwide. How long has it been around?
Since 1978. Was the first organized chapter of Vietnam Veterans of America.
And we mentioned that there's about 65,000 members in 48 states. How many, do you know how many Vietnam veterans and how many Vietnam era veterans are eligible to join?
Well, I know in nationwide, I have no clue, because it's a million something. But in the state of Minnesota, the last figures I got is there are 140,000 people that served during the specified times somewhere in an active duty somewhere that qualified to be a Vietnam veteran and are Vietnam veterans.
So the eligibility for the Minnesota State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America, who's eligible?
Anyone that served from February 28, 1961 through May 7, 1975 on any duty location anywhere that served in the armed forces during that time is eligible, and they are considered, and they are a Vietnam veteran. It's a Vietnam era, but you served during the Vietnam War.
And for those 140,000 of us that are eligible to join in Minnesota, we only have about 1,200. If we were to join, what motivates us to join? What would we accomplish if we joined the VVA?
Well, the misconception is so many out there believe that they don't qualify, or that, you know, but the people have taken consideration that it's the support of those that were on the ground and were in country that relied solely on the guys that weren't. And, joining Vietnam Veterans of America, you know, is you can put as much work into it as you want. You can go to join a chapter. You can be an at-large Minnesota member. And if you want to be active, you join a chapter, and you know, they got different fundraisings. But you don't have to do it. The strongest power that we have of being a Vietnam veteran is our voice in D.C. And they listen to us. They've learned from us. And the things that, never leave another veteran behind is our continuing support for those, so that we don't repeat history for the young guys today.
So just like the other veteran service organizations, if you're a member of the VFW, if you're a member of the American Legion, collectively their membership can go out and lobby Congress. In Minnesota, they can lobby the legislature. They can look after veterans issues. They can work on those type of things. Same thing with the Vietnam Veterans of America. You can deal with some issues that are important to Vietnam veterans and all servicemen.
Exactly, and you know we get our ideas come from those with experience, and those that have have something and the topic's right, and we work on it, and if it's wrong, we write it, and it's working.
So, who benefits from the work of the Vietnam Veterans of America?
The people that benefit from being a member of Vietnam Veterans is our communities, our other organizations. We're involved in everything that you can think of that has something to do with military and a social well-being for our society.
So we're looking out for veterans once again and making sure that the United States keeps their promises.
We're going to leave no veteran behind.
There you go. We're speaking with Mark Madsen, president of Minnesota State Council Vietnam Veterans of America on Minnesota Military Radio. Mark, let's get to Minnesota and Vietnam veterans. I may have misspoken earlier. There's about 1,200 members in 11 chapters?
11 chapters, yeah. We have 11 chapters, and right now there's four startup chapters. And the four startup chapters are in Marshall, Minnesota, Grand Rapids, Isle, Minnesota, and West St. Paul is starting another chapter.
And for information on where the chapters are, you've got a website?
Yep. The website, you can go to mnvva.org, or you can go to vva290.org, and you can pull all the information down on there for membership and forms, et cetera.
So the website is mnvva.org, and we'll have a link to that on our Facebook website, on our Facebook page for Minnesota Military Radio. You also mentioned VVA 290 in St. Cloud. You're also the president up there, I understand.
Yes, I've been a chapter president up in Central Minnesota, 290, this is the end of my third term, so we're having elections coming up, and we're a very active chapter up there. We have a color guard, and we do two basic fundraisers. We're coming up with our biggest one on March 2nd, which is our silent auction, live auction, and roast beef dinner that's incredible. So
that's a pretty active chapter in Minnesota?
Yes. We have 182 members, and I think we have AVVA members. We have 13, I believe.
And where do you meet? Where are you housed?
We meet the first Tuesday of every month at Whitney Senior Center in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And at 7 o'clock at night on Tuesday, the first Tuesday of every month.
So you're doing double duty at Chapter 290 in St. Cloud, and also the president of the state council.
Yes, and taking the president of the state council and moved back down to the Twin Cities, so I'm still doing the commuting back up to St. Cloud for the activities up there. And I put a lot of miles on.
And a couple of years ago, as the president of the state council.
Yeah, I got another year and a half to go on that term too. So.
I want to ask you, there are 9 authorized veteran service organizations in Minnesota, and you're all members of what's called the Commander's Task Force. Can you tell us what the Commander's Task Force is, and how does that help you?
Well, the Commander's Task Force is, like you say, is commanders of all the organizations, and we meet with the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs and Larry Schlito, who's a commissioner of Minnesota Veteran Affairs. And, we take the challenges of the veteran today and we put it together. And, they do a great job in lining up some legislation. And we all agree on the topics that need work on. And they just do an excellent job. Minnesota is real fortunate to have people we have working in our department for veterans.
So the head of each of those 9 veteran service organizations meets once a month at the Commander's Task Force. You talk about legislative accomplishments, things you want to do, things to help the veterans home. And I'm sure you also talk about the various fundraising benefits that you have at the different organizations.
Exactly. And as you know, with the new people coming in on the legislative department in Minnesota, keeping them aware of the things that are in need, the things that need fixing, and the things that we got a long agenda, and if I can, I'll plug a couple of them that are money passionate about. And one is the Minneapolis Veterans Home is their phase 3. And they've gone through phase 1, and a few years ago that they wanted some changes out there, and they've been doing that. And phase 3 is yet to be provided for. They're started phase two, but once they get that phase three done, you know, we'll have some real comfortable beds and stuff for the, you know, our veterans that have to use the veterans home facility. And the other one is a veteran lottery ticket. And with all these new guys coming back and downsizing of the military, if that happens to come about, you know, the funds that we need to assist these guys are, you know, we're going to be short pockets here pretty soon. And, you know, by establishing a lottery ticket that specifically the proceeds of that would go to, you know, our veterans, Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, I think it would be a real logical way of increasing funding for our programs.
So the CTF collectively has been helping the veterans home to get to that last phase of the project that actually ties the whole campus out there together, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty hard to start a project and then stall. And last year we got a stall in it, and I don't know how it happened, but it happened, and we got to finish these things, you know, and I mean it. Minnesota, you know, everywhere you go, you see a guy in uniform or he's got that veteran's cap on and people saying, thank you for your service. But, you know, we can't stop there. You know, we got to take care of the things that we started and make sure that Minnesota is a proud place for a veteran to live.
Mark, we just got a couple of minutes left, but I know as an example of one of the things that the Vietnam Veterans of America was working on was the veterans' funeral protection. As you mentioned, you and I talked before we got on the air, a lot of the guys belong to the VFW, the American Legion, the VVA, maybe the Patriot Guard, and we've had these issues of people protesting at funerals of our servicemen and women. And you were the VVA was active in passing that Veterans Funeral Protection Law.
You know, I can't say enough about the Patriot Guard and the things they're doing to secure that the funerals aren't disrupted by activists and things. And I'm very proud that many of our Vietnam Veteran of America members throughout the state of Minnesota are also members of the Patriot Guard. And, you know, anything that, you know, those guys have just been incredible. And our members are proud to serve with them. And I encourage any of their members that are eligible to be a Vietnam veteran to also join us.
And what that law actually did was to ban picketing at funeral services of troops and veterans from 150 feet back to 300 feet and to expand the time frame. They can't picket for up to 2 hours before and after, 1 hour after a funeral. So pretty important that if we lose a service member or a veteran that we can do the honors appropriately without people interfering, isn't it?
Yes, and you know, back, I don't know if it's 4 years ago, and we lost one of our young men from Granite Falls, my hometown. And I seen it was, you know, 5 below 0, and Patriot Guard was out there standing guard. And, you know, I seen the importance and the dedication of what those guys do. And it goes back to the years of protesting during the Vietnam War, where, you know, there's a lot of intimidation and stuff. And we didn't, flaunt that at that time. And, you know, just funerals are sacred.
All about honor, dignity, and respect, and the Minnesota Patriot Guard does a great job of it.
Excellent.
Mark, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts about the Minnesota State Council, Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota, and all of those Vietnam veterans, Vietnam-era eligible veterans? We got to get a few more of those to sign up, don't we?
Well, yeah, definitely. And you know, like I say, I'm the State Council president, and I felt for years that I had no real correlation because I was not an in-country Vietnam veteran. And here today I'm standing representing, you know, the whole state of Minnesota for those that were in country, and I'm proud to do that. And I take the honor from the people that I've known and the stories that I hear from my fellow veterans, and can take that and use my ability to carry the message and to help them to make sure that their benefits are coming to them. And it's an honor to serve for the people that, you know, did made it in country and supported our veterans.
Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota are doing a lot of good work to help our veterans. And if you want to find out more information, please go to mnvva.org or you can go to our Facebook page at Minnesota Military Radio. Mark, I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
And thank you for having me, Tom. Pleasure.
That was Mark Madsen, President of Minnesota State Council, Vietnam Veterans of Minnesota. In a moment, we'll come back and hear about the latest deployment of the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. This week on Minnesota Military Radio, Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber joins us to share his inspiring story of resilience in the face of cancer, and we'll hear from the editor of one of the state's most popular veterans magazines. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to hear about the latest deployment of the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
Drive home your support for Minnesota military members, veterans, and their families by purchasing a Support Our Troops license plate for your car or motorcycle. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, together with the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, will use your annual minimum contribution of $30 for the betterment of military families and the homeless and underserved veterans across the state. To purchase Support Our Troops plates, visit your local Department of Motor Vehicles or call 651-4-TROOPS. Support Our Troops license plates are also available from dealerships. Be sure to ask about these special plates when you purchase your next new or used vehicle.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minnesota Air National Guard is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Blomquist from the 179th Fighter Squadron, which is part of the 148th Fighter Wing stationed in Duluth, Minnesota. Colonel Blomquist, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Sir, I understand that you recently got back from a deployment to Afghanistan, and that we got you off the field this morning from probably out hunting pheasants.
Yeah, I was out bow hunting some deer this afternoon, actually.
Okay. Well, welcome back, sir, and we just want to tell the listeners, can you tell us a little bit about your career? I understand you've been in over 20 years and deployed several times.
Yeah, that's correct. I've been in the Minnesota Air National Guard at the 148th Fighter Wing up in Duluth, Minnesota since 1992. So just going on my 20th year, I worked in avionics, F-16 avionics going through college. And about a year after graduation, went off to pilot training and came back and have been at the 148th ever since, flying F-16s with a whole slew of deployments in there, but the combat deployments were 3 to Iraq and the most recent one to Afghanistan.
And, Colonel, for our listeners that might not be familiar with the Bulldogs of the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth, Minnesota, can you tell us how many Air National Guard people do we have in Duluth and what kind of capabilities do we have?
Well, there's roughly 1,000 people at the 148th Fighter Wing. About 400 or so are full-time, with the rest of them being part-time. So the 400 are up there every day training and keeping the place running. And then the rest of them are more your traditional drilling guardsmen that we have other places in the country. So what the 148th does is, number one, we train to fight America's wars, and then we have several missions here in the local area where we help out with disasters. We also sit a 24/7 continuous alert mission right up in Duluth to respond to any sort of air problems like we had back during 9/11 or the Payne Stewart crash or any of those other issues with people crossing the borders.
Sir, I recall stories of September 11, 2001, that the F-16s from Duluth were all over the country.
Yes, they were all over the place, doing a lot of work at a lot of different alert sites, including right down there in Minneapolis not too long after the fact, and Texas and the East Coast, and you name it, we were pretty close to there or overflying it.
And, sir, I had the opportunity to take a tour of the base about a year ago, and as I recall, the Air National Guard in Duluth, the 148th, has a large contingent that does the firefighting at the airport, and you also have a bomb disposal squad up there.
Yeah, that's correct. We do all of the crash response up there at the base, and then if there are any problems with bomb threats or any sort of explosive disposal that needs to get done, we've got a team up there at Duluth that does that.
Seems that some of our World War II troops brought home some souvenirs that might not just be safe.
Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yeah, it's an incredible bomb disposal squad, and you do a lot of things at Duluth. Now, sir, I also understand that over the last few years that your aircraft were upgraded to the new Block 50 F-16s?
Yeah, that's correct. We used to have the oldest F-16s, and hopefully because of our good work and our legislatures, they decided to give us some new airplanes, the most capable F-16s that we have in the fleet, and we're proud to operate those and maintain those airplanes.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Chris Blomquist from the Duluth Air National Guard, part of the 148th Fighter Wing, and the 179th Fighter Squadron Commander on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, I'm interested when you got the new aircraft that had to include a lot of training and a lot of prep time before you were able to even consider deployment?
Yeah, it sure did. Typically with any conversion, you usually have about a 1 to 2 year window before you even begin your conversion to kind of plan your conversion. But it's one of those things that we didn't really know was going to happen until it did. So not that we were unprepared, we just weren't as prepared as we could have been to execute the plan. But we got it together and had a very good two-year plan. Typically, it'll take you 2 years to convert, to get everybody trained, to get all the equipment required to fix the airplanes. And it's not just the pilots. We fly similar airplanes or did before, but there's a lot of changes to them. And then there's significantly different mission sets that we do with the upgraded jets as well. Not to mention the maintenance side. They're learning a completely different engine, a lot of new electronics, a lot of new avionics and computers and different systems. So early on, what we did is we sent a lot of people off to different schools, whether that was for maintenance or for flying. Probably in the first, 3 to 6 months, people are going to different schools, classes, getting qualifications. And then we brought a lot of people up to Duluth to train us as well. Had some individuals go off to simulator training and then some Block 50 courses down in Phoenix and out on the East Coast, and basically learn. The biggest difference to our new mission is doing suppression of enemy air defenses, and they call that SEED. That's the acronym. So it's a lot of, essentially finding enemy radars and seeking them out, properly identifying them, and then suppressing them so that they can't shoot surface-to-air missiles at our aircraft. So that took us, roughly a year and a half to get good at doing all that stuff, being able to operate the airplane to the new mission and having our maintainers, gold plate or fix those airplanes up to the guard standard. And after that, we got into our close air support spin-up in preparation for going to Afghanistan. So we spent about 4 to 5 months exclusively getting the jets ready for that and having the pilots trained to that mission set.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about training up for this deployment and what the deployment actually looked like.
All right.
So we'll be right back with Colonel Blomquist in just a moment. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Friends, this is Don Pancake, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. As we continue our mission to train school patrols across the state, we encourage you to make a difference. Please visit legionville.org. That's legionville.org.
Fellow veterans and supporters, this is Lee Alfords, Department Commander of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars, inviting you to join us for a Memorial Day Ride for Healing. Proceeds will support the National Vietnam Veteran Memorial Education Center. For more information, visit rideforhealing.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking to Lieutenant Colonel Chris Blomquist from the Minnesota Air National Guard, the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth. Colonel, we were just talking about the upgrade and the conversion to new Block 50 F-16s, and I'm reading from an article here now from August of this year, and it said that aircraft maintenance personnel performed 18,495 hours of acceptance inspections on the Block 50 aircraft upon receiving the jets, and that the Bulldogs deployed to Nellis Air Force Base three times for advanced aerial combat training exercises in 2011 and 2012 just to get ready and up to speed on this aircraft. That's a lot of work, isn't it?
It was an immense amount of work, but one that we felt we had to get done just given the fact that we were coming out of conversion, and it is a pretty uncertain world right now, so we wanted to make sure that we did an outstanding job with the conversion.
Did you send the mechanics and the support crew over there early, sir?
Well, we have an early departure team that essentially follows the jets over there, so I went over there about 2 weeks early just to get things ready on the ground at Kandahar. I flew over there on a C-17 with one stop in Germany, and then the rest of the folks will follow the airplanes to fix them if they break en route. And then we'll have a main body of about 300 people that go over there at the same time, probably about a week after I got there, to start preparations. And then, the different early arrival teams with the aircraft will, turn those jets at Marone or Singapore or at Al Udeid and get them moving into country.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Chris Blomquist about the Minnesota Air National Guard's recent deployment of the 148th Fighter Wing to Afghanistan on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, once you were over there in place, what was a typical day like, and were these deployments similar to the ones in Iraq?
Well, I'll start with the normal day for me was, number one, we're running 24/7 operations over there. So even when I'm sleeping, I'm still worried about what's going on down at the squadron with the jets and the guys that are out there flying the airplanes and turning wrenches on them. So typically I would get up about 4 in the morning, walk down the outside hallway into the burning dump fire smoke and take a shower and go eat at one of the DFACs with about 2,000 of my best friends and then head into work by about 6 o'clock. And then typically you would go in there and get an intelligence briefing, and then you'd talk to an Army ground liaison officer, and you'd probably spend about an hour briefing your mission to go fly. As far as the flying went, it would be, normally anywhere from a 5 to a 7 hour mission out there in support of the Army folks that were outside of the wire at different forward operating bases or that were moving supplies throughout the country.
So this was close air support, sir?
Yes, it was close air support is what we did for those guys, and, basically overwatch and helping those guys out of sticky situations. So, the country itself is beautiful. It's hot, it's dusty where we were at. But we got to fly up into the mountains where the tops of the mountains are up there, 17 to 20,000 feet or more, snow covered, and it's just a truly vast environment over there. So as far as the differences go between Iraq and Afghanistan, a lot of the infrastructure was the same. A lot of the rules of engagement, the administrative process of flying around the country were very similar to Iraq, but the terrain was a lot different, and it seemed to be fairly busy over there. We felt like we were really helping the guys out on the ground a lot, so it was rewarding from that standpoint.
Sir, it was a two-month deployment, but I'm sure every day was a work day, and you got a lot of hours on the aircraft while you were there.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. You really didn't want to take any time off when you were over there because you just would spend time missing home and deer season and fishing and all that. But, we'd probably work about 12-hour days, 6 or 7 days a week. And it was amazing how much we actually flew over there. I didn't actually realize how much we were flying till towards the end of the deployment. Typically at the 148th, we fly about 3,500 flying hours per year. And in our 60-day deployment, we flew 5,200 hours in 60 days, so nearly double in 2 months. So we put a lot of hours on the airplanes. The maintenance guys worked very hard to keep those things flying well.
And sir, all our airmen and all our aircraft are back home safely.
Yeah, that was one of the happiest moments is when we turned over the ATO, got everybody back home, and we had no safety incidents. Everything went flawlessly over there. Everybody is back home, safe and sound.
Sir, we just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts about this deployment or the 148th Fighter Wing?
No, I'm just really looking forward to what the future holds for us. I think we've really proven ourselves with our new aircraft. We'd like to thank the community for all their support that they've provided to, keep us moving along, getting the newest aircraft, and we'll make sure that we are definitely doing our best with that. We'll continue to be a great asset to the American people and the state of Minnesota.
Colonel, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Chris Blomquist from the 148th Fighter Wing, a part of the Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to discuss, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Mark Madsen from the Minnesota Vietnam Veterans of America, Lieutenant Colonel Chris Blomquist, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber joins us to share his inspiring story of resilience in the face of cancer, and we'll hear from the editor of one of the state's most popular veterans magazines. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.